Welcome to episode 48 of the Better Band Bureau podcast.
You're listening to the Better Band Bureau podcast, the number one online resource for DIY bands to learn about the music business and touring. If you want to turn your band into a lean, mean touring machine, you're in the right place. Now, let's get this show on the road.
It is time for another episode of the Better Band Bureau podcast. My name is James Cross, and I'm here with Matt Hose of Alive in Barcelona. How are you today, Matt?
I'm doing pretty awesome, James. How's everything over there on the east side?
Glad to hear it. Things are good here, and I gotta say, I'm not the only person on the east side today. We have Howie Spangler of Ballyhoo from Aberdeen, Maryland, joining us on the show today. How's it going, Howie?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're excellent.
Great to have you on the podcast. For those who don't know you, you're the singer and guitarist for Ballyhoo. You call yourselves Beach Rock, which I think is a really great way to describe it. You're also the host of Tales from the Green Room, which is a podcast about the music industry. So if anyone listening to this wants to go beyond and learn even more, Howie, you've interviewed tons of guests over the years. I think you're, what, 2.5 years in now?
Something like that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. About 2.5.
Check that podcast out if you want to learn even more about the music business. We're just going to today focus on Ballyhoo and your 25 years as a band. So first of all, congratulations on the anniversary, which was, I think, a few months ago.
Yeah, thank you.
And then, of course, how things shifted when COVID hit, which I got to say, we've given you guys a few shout outs for the live streams because right from the start, the production value was so high and really impressive. And a lot of other artists didn't do that till later. And for some artists, I think it was too late because the fans were already used to kind of low production value. And then they're like, the streams suck. We're not going to tune in. But you guys from the start just killed it with the streams.
Thanks, man. We were very lucky to have that, to have Hartford Sound. It's like 20 minutes from my house. And we knew that we had to do something when things started going south. We started losing gigs. And we're starting to try to find venues and, you know, what can we do this from the basement? What do we need? What gear do we need? One of the local venues here had contacted us and we were going to do it there in Baltimore, but they weren't really set up, you know, and they were talking about like, it was like one camera and, you know, I just saw it in my head as like, this might be weird, but we'll do the best we can with it, you know? So we're like, I'm asking questions, I'm renting gear, I'm renting like wireless stuff because I wanted more than one camera. I wanted at least three, you know, at least maybe, if anything, two stationary and one guy moving around, you know, just to create some movement. And I just don't like the idea of a static image, you know, and then, you know, it was just, what about the Wi-Fi? Like, are we going to have issues? Like, you know, who's going to run lights? Like things like that. And then our governor is like, sorry, everything's, you know, what do they call it? Essential businesses only. And so they had to shut it down. So we got in touch with Hartford Sound and they had the same night available. So we just slid in there and it was just like a dream. It was like, whoa. I mean, it looks like we're playing on like Fallon or SNL or something, you know? And we're just grateful that we have it here. And my phone was blowing up all night and into the next day. Just from like friends and like industry friends as well, like other band guys and other managers and stuff. They're like, bro, like every band just needs to just quit, like not even try. Like you guys like destroyed that. And I was, you know, obviously grateful, but I knew we had a great product. You know, I know it was a good first time, but shout out to every artist that is doing something. Doesn't have to look like that. Doesn't have to sound like that. It's great if you can get it that way. But shout out to any artist that is actually just doing anything to serve their fans. To me, I think it's kind of it's a little, I don't know, disrespectful in a way. If you're not like, it's like you were so used to going out on the road and this is just how it was. You had, you know, fans coming to see you paying to buy tickets and whatever and buy your merch and stream your music. And then when shit goes down, like you don't have enough time for them. Like you can't do anything. You know, so to me, I think it's a big loss for both the fan and the artist, you know, if the artist doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think also, you know, for artists who aren't doing anything, it's going to be a lot more difficult to climb back out of that hole once, hopefully soon, this is all a thing of the past. The artists like you and you know, Fred from Taking Back Sunday, Dropkick Murphys, all the artists who are still doing stuff now, those are going to be the ones who can just jump right back into touring once it's safe to do so, because their fans were there the whole time. They've stayed relevant. So speaking of staying relevant, you guys have another stream coming up 2 days after this episode premieres. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's our Halloween thing. So we started doing a Halloween show back in 2007 at a local venue called the Record Theater in Towson. It's another venue. It's like 40 minutes from my house. Like, just everybody, you know, just pack it out. And we would just get like the coolest bands, like all our friends, you know, bands to come out with us. And we just started building this thing. Every Halloween, you knew that this is what was going down. And so we just continued it this whole time. And we did take a year off, 2018? I don't remember. We took off one of the years. My dad had passed away, and it was like a lot of, like, it took the wind out of my sails for a year or two. He's the reason why I love Halloween, man. He was always like, we watched scary movies, and he let me watch Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street and stuff when I was like six, which, who does that? Cause that's crazy. I would never let my kids watch that shit right now. But, I just remember trick or treating, and I don't know, it was just the best. And for whatever reason, the energy was just gone. I didn't feel like, it's a big production, you know, like we do the stage, we like build sets and stuff, like, or well, I don't build them. We have friends build them, but you know, there's a lot going on, coordination and what we're going to wear, like how we're going to dress up and the set list and everything's got to be, and I'm in there like the last minute, like just making sure everything's right on stage. Like this goes here and this goes here. And, you know, it's a lot of planning, and I was just over it and sad and all that. So we did skip a year, but you know, this is the 13th one coming up, which is pretty cool. Number 13.
It's going to be extra spooky this year.
Extra spooky. So, you know, the COVID thing is just, you know, when shit goes down, like you just adapt, you know, you just adapt just like we do with the live streams. And, you know, it's like, we weren't going to, you know, I saw fans going, oh, I hope there's going to be a Halloween stream. Like, you know, it's usually a Halloween show every year. Of course, man. Of course. Like, we're not going to stop just because, you know, we have a way. There's a way to do it. We've been doing it. So, you know, and this just made it even more interesting, actually, because we had some ideas where, what if we did some really, we use the fact that it's a broadcast. It's like it's essentially like a show that people are watching on TV, on you know, YouTube or whatever. I don't give too much away, but we got some really cool stuff that we're going to do. And it's going to be completely different from normal because we are, you know, we're embracing the fact that it's a live broadcast, you know? So I don't know. I can't wait for people to see it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I love hearing that, that approach to it. The broadcast is making a comeback.
Yeah.
You know, YouTube is turning way more into the live stream channel. You know, people like to see that extra layer of intimacy that they don't get through the music and they don't get through the videos. And so I think that's really awesome. I love that. Your attitude about it, you know, that's, I think, a big part of what James and I talk about to a lot of our listeners is that adaptation is the most important thing. And that's what you constantly have to do in the industry. And then, you know, you're thrown a giant, you know, the entire world is thrown a curveball and you seem to have, you know, it doesn't shake you at all. You know, you have an incredible resolve, and that's awesome. That's admirable. I think that's, you know, I wish our listeners could see just the look on your face when you talk about this, because there's nothing but confidence behind your eyes, and that's awesome. So for anybody listening, you know, this is gold. You know, the ability to adapt is integral in any business, but especially, you know, nature laughs last. So you might be planning, you know, you might have all these tours lined up. You might have a whole bunch of revenue that's supposed to come in, and then pandemic.
Exactly what happened.
And so it's up to you to say, hey, how are we going to adapt out of this situation? And I also wanted to say thanks so much for sharing that story, you know, about, you know, taking your year off and about your dad. I know that those are, you know, those are really intimate and personal details. So thanks so much for sharing that. I really appreciate that. And I'm personally really looking forward to this year's Halloween stream. So
thanks, man.
I can't wait to see what's in store.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, I think that, you know, adaptation, as you said, it's just like anything else, man. It's like nature and evolution and, you know, all the animals and everything that's survived is because they've adapted, you know, over the millions of years. And it's no different when you're talking about just over a couple months of human life. Like, you know, the life that we knew it is over as of right now, you know, hopefully it comes back. So we had to create a new way to do things. And the cool thing was, I was already doing like the live stream stuff. I had my YouTube channel going. I had my setup, my camera and my mic, and, you know, just, I had everything that I needed, and I was going live and I was uploading YouTube videos and Instagram and stuff. And then all this stuff goes down and it's like, I'm ready to go. Like, I'm good. I just doubled down. I just played more live, you know? And I think there's something to be said about being prepared. You should always be looking ahead and sort of future-proofing and try to see what's coming, you know? I mean, we didn't see this coming, but I was ready for it when it happened. You know, I just saw that things were moving online. For me, the podcast, the Tales from the Green Room podcast, I started seeing that video pods was the new way to go. Like, the podcast isn't just audio anymore, you know? And so I was like, well, I guess I'm going to start going live and doing a video podcast and then just use that audio as the audio podcast. And, you know, but then you've got like H3, they've got like a great production. I mean, there's plenty of like good, video podcasts out there where they have like producers, like people like switching cameras and lighting and cool vibey setups. You see it every day now. But I saw that coming and I was like, okay. And I was a little late to the game, actually, as far as video pods were concerned. But I started doing it and, you know, it got even more interactive, you know, because I use StreamYard for my live pods. And basically I can see comments right there, just like I'm doing like a YouTube live or something, or a Facebook live. The chat's right there. So I see people like asking me questions. So when I have an artist or a guest on, towards the end of the show, we can do a Q&A like live. And I'm like, hey, you got any questions for whoever? And it's dope too. You can like fly the questions up, you know, for the video. But I don't know. I'm always looking ahead. I love technology. You know, as far as the band was concerned, we knew we had to move the show online and we had to move the merch online, because the merch was always on sale at the shows. And we always had an online store, but we never really like focused on it. And we never like, I don't know, probably even cared that much. You know, it was all about the live show and the touring, you know. And we had talked about like trying to beef it up a little bit, make it look better, try to direct some sales that way. But when all this went down, that was the only way to get merch. So it was like, yep, we got to put everything online. And now it's just like, we've been going crazy, just like new merch every month, every couple months. Like whenever we would do a live stream, we would do like the 24 hours only, like live stream commemorative t-shirt with the set list on the back from that show. And then after that 24 hours, it's gone. You can't get it ever again, you know? So that created some demand. It forces you to innovate. And I don't know, I think now that I'd like to focus on, I mean, there's a lot of crazy things that happen, a lot of bad things, but I like to focus on the good things that are going to come out of this. You know, the live stream's not going away when touring comes back. We're going to be able to do, like, imagine doing, putting out a new record and then doing a live stream a month before the tour starts, playing songs from the record or to celebrate, or doing like a fundraiser type of thing for, you know, your hotel budget or, you know, just your touring budget in general. Like, hey guys, we're trying to raise money to go on tour. Would you mind donating, you know, or buying some merch? We're going to do a live stream, like stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of ideas. And then the online store thing, that's never going away either. I think people are so used to buying online now, you know, every year we get into the 21st century is like that Apple Pay, man, it's dangerous, you know?
To that, you know, you seem to have an incredibly good grasp on how to interact with your community. Now you actually have a name for your community as well, the Ballyhooligans, which is awesome.
What
can you tell to another artist who's trying to basically build and nurture these same types of relationships that you've created with your listeners? You seem to do a lot of things, you know, like everything that you've mentioned so far is about reaching out It's about, you know, saying like, oh yeah, we got to make sure we keep stimulating, you know, got to keep logs on the fire. If you don't have time to make music for your fans when things aren't good, then why should they come and, you know, listen to you when things are good? You know, you're very consistent with everything that you're saying. And it all kind of has this, fan base centric, you know, ideology behind it. What's a piece of advice you could give to an artist who's trying to build their own community like that?
You have to go back to, what is the nature of what we do? It's, you know, we make art, we make music. And this is for anybody that like makes a product, you know, that's like trying to get somewhere, build a career around an idea, a product, you know. The only way that you go anywhere is if someone consumes that product. That's the only way like you can do anything. You know, you can write music and you can play music and you can record music. And you can put it on Spotify for all for yourself. And that's totally fine. And you can have no ambitions of, I just want to see my stuff out there on the platforms and be able to listen to it, you know, and be proud of my work. Fine. But most of us that do that, we want to build a career around it. And we want to, you know, not have to be a part of the rat race and work a regular job. We want music to pay the bills. And the only way to do that is if you have fans. People consuming it. And it's not enough for your fans to just like the songs and, you know, connect with them. If a song hits you, you're like, oh, I love this song, right? But you have to go further. You have to over-deliver for your listener, for your fan. And, you know, I'm speaking in terms of music, but this is for anything, art, photography, whatever. If you're a chef, I don't know. Like, you have to connect. Like, when you're at a restaurant, you know, especially it's usually the mom and pop type of restaurant. You're eating and then the owner is walking around greeting people. Hey guys, how you doing? How's your meal tonight? That is the same thing. That's the same approach. Is like, yo guys, just checking in on the Facebook group here. How's everybody doing today? You know, like just being accessible and giving a face to the music, I guess, that's invaluable. It's so much value. It's invaluable. You know what I mean? Like, You have to be willing to do more. And it's not just about the music anymore. It's, you have to create this sort of, I hate to use the word brand, you know, but that's essentially what it is. And the brand is you. Be you. Just speak your truth, you know, in your music, on your live streams. Don't try to be someone else. Don't try to be a character. Now, if your whole thing is a character, then that's what you do, obviously. But you know, the most important, get on there, talk about yourself, how you feel, like what you're into, like connect. And a lot of times, man, I'll get in there and I'll drop like to the Facebook group. I'll drop like, hey, new merch is coming soon. Or, hey, what do you guys think about this? Like, I like to get in and ask questions. It's like free R&D. You know, it's like, you know, it's, I'm not the one that's going to be wearing this shirt, right? Sometimes I wear our merch. I do wear our merch sometimes. But ultimately, I want you guys to be happy with this. What do you guys want? What do you want to wear? What kind of, like, does this look dope? Would you wear this? And, you know, we're lucky enough to be like, everybody's like, take my money. Like all the memes, you know, take my money memes. But, you know, we've put out stuff that we've been super stoked on. Like, this is rad. And like, it doesn't sell very well. You know, it's like, get in there. How do you know what they want if you don't ask them? So it's all connected, man. It starts here. It starts with the person, you know, the person behind the artist. Just over deliver, make yourself accessible, go live a lot, be involved in the chat. You know, Steven Slate is a very accomplished audio guy. He's a mixer. He creates these amazing products for recording and mixing. And I have his microphone. I have like all his plugins, you know, that all that stuff. Dude, he's my age and he's rich as fuck. And he doesn't have to do this, but he's in the Slate Audiophiles Facebook every day, replying and just in the conversation, you know. He doesn't have to do that, but it's a great look, whether he knows that or not. I'm sure he knows it, but it's a great look, man. Just be with your audience and don't be too cool. And don't worry, there's still going to be some mysticism about you, but get in there, man, and just be a normal person. It'll take you that much further.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that really shows a difference between artists who do what you're talking about and artists who don't. And to an extent, the artists who didn't 10 years ago are catching on and growing these communities, or at least interacting with their fans on Instagram or their Facebook page or whatever. So there's some connection there. Going back to the history of the band, now that you've been around for 25 years and had relatively few lineup changes compared to a lot of bands, like you'll see bands that have, you know, an entirely new lineup every 5 years with like one member who's still in the band. For you guys, I know you and your brother have been in the band the whole time, and then Scott came in 20-ish years ago, and you've had a few different bass players, but they've all lasted for a long time too. You've all stuck together for so long. What do you think was the key to that?
It's the drive. It's I didn't want to give up on it. I loved it too much. I still do. You know, it's easy when you're a kid, you're in high school and you're doing friends' parties and there's no money, there's no business. You know, it's all about just, I love this, you know? And so I used to draw like in class, you know, just, I still have like flyers that I drew. You know, I'm supposed to be paying attention, but I'm just drawing. And like, it's like me, it's like Ballyhoo and my favorite bands, Green Day and whoever else in the 90s playing a festival together, like just stuff like that, you know, and we're like one of the headliners, you know, and I had dreams of being on SNL and playing the MTV VMAs and being on the radio and signing to a major label. Those are the things that you wanted to do in the 90s as a band. Sign to a major label, be in all the big shows, and go on tour. It just really stuck with me, man. It was, I knew that I didn't want to be, like, as I said earlier, part of the rat race. I didn't want to, you know, work a bunch of shit jobs and, you know, take some job that I didn't like and then live the rest of my life and collect Social Security and die. I knew that the only way I was going to be happy was if I was doing the things that I wanted to do. And I knew that at an early age. And then when it came time to like go to college, you know, as high school was wrapping up, you know, I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm in this band, you know, and like, I'm telling family members like, no, no. And, you know, I graduated high school and I just took a year and, you know, did the band thing, whatever. But then I was like, all right, maybe I'll just for my grandmother, like my mom, she just wants me to, it was all coming from a good place, you know, a caring, just, I don't want you to be out on the street kind of thing. And back then, I mean, it's even easier now. I mean, it's not easy, but it's easier now to become a celebrity or something, you know, than it was back then, just because of social media, you know? I mean, you can be Instagram or TikTok famous now, you know? We didn't have any of that stuff back then. So it was even more dire, you know? It was like the percentage was way down. And so, you know, I was like, all right, I'll go to college. I'll do this thing, you know, for you. And, you know, sure enough, I did 2 semesters at the community college here. And I did not like it. I did really well in speech class for some reason. Like, I don't feel like I speak that well, like, especially on podcasts and shit. But I did great. But everything else, my broadcasting class, failed it. Like, I just didn't care, man. I didn't, this is not what I wanted to do. It was a waste of money. You know, I want to say it was a waste of time, but it was probably, I probably needed that, you know? I definitely believe that we are the sum of everything we've ever done. Everything that's ever happened to us, we are the sum of that right now, you know? So maybe I needed that, but ultimately it was just, I'm breaking up with girlfriends. You know, there's nothing, I'm quitting jobs. There's nothing that's going to keep me from this. And so I just kept doing what I had always done. And that was just play shows, write songs, you know, put out records, go on tour. You know, I was on MySpace, like, in the DM there, wasn't called DM back then, but 8 hours a day, every day in the mid 2000s, I was already doing that. You know, I didn't know that I was serving the fans. I just was doing that, but I didn't know that that was like one of the things you had to do. I just did it because it just felt right. It just felt like, oh, these people are like nice enough to leave a comment or nice enough to message me. I should reply. I should give them a time of day. And ultimately what that does, it just builds your brand. It builds the confidence in you by your consumer, you know? And so all of that, watching the growth, we had a significant growth in like the late 2000s once we started touring. It became a drug, man. It became a drug. It was like, this is too good. I love this too much. And even when I had my first kid, it was like, it was scary, but it's like, well, I'm still not quitting. So like 3 weeks after my son was born, I was back on the road, you know, and at that point I had to be on the road like 8 months out of the year because, you know, that was the only way I made money. You know, I had a job. I was working, I worked a bunch of warehouse jobs in the early years, but steady through the years, I was a server and a bartender. But, you know, I was either going to go on tour, or I was going to work 12 hours a day, you know, working doubles at a job I hated. Either way, I'm not going to see my son. So I might as well go do what I love and build something. You know, just working at the restaurant was not doing anything. In the long run, it wasn't doing anything. There was no end game there. There was no great resolve. There was no, when you start building something like a band or, you know, you're an author or whatever it is, eventually with the compound effect, it turns into something, you know, you grow. Just working at a restaurant, I would still be working there and nothing, you know, there were women there like nearly 60 years old, you know, waiting tables. I'm like, I'm not doing that, you know? So that's what it was, man. It was just the drive. It was just, and if you don't want to be in the band anymore, I'm not going to make you be in the band anymore. I don't want people here that don't want to be here. I respect it. We're still friends. Cool. But like, this is still going. So again, long-winded answer.
I think that's awesome though. Thank you for sharing that. Like, I think a lot of bands need to hear that because they want to have the success, but they don't recognize how much of a grind it's going to be to build up a business over years.
Yeah.
You know, everyone hears about the artists who overnight become a success, but you don't really think about the artists who have been doing something for 10, 15 years before they get their, you know, their big break. These days, a big break might not even be a big break the way we used to think of it. You know, you're probably not going to get signed to like Warner or Universal or anything like that. But that doesn't mean that you're not a successful artist, because there's so much you can do now that you don't need a label for.
Yeah.
So kind of going down that rabbit hole, we like to use the term decide it yourself for DIY.
I like that.
You know, you've had a label like Law Records. Now you have your own label. You've probably had management at some point, but I think you've still been very invested in your career, even when you have a team. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you kind of maintain control of your career, even while you're outsourcing things to other parties?
This is a loaded question as well. So like, you know, I have a problem with micromanagement. I have a problem butting in where I probably just need to like let the managers take care of it. I care so much. I do not want this to be squandered. You know, we're 25 years in and I know, like, I talk to our fans every day. I know what they want, or at least I have a better idea than most, I'll say. And we've been through so much. We've done, oh my God, we've spent like amounts of money that would make you throw up in your mouth that went nowhere, you know, on things that didn't do anything because we simply had to try, you know, and it's the cost of doing business. You know, bands that just give up after a few years, they didn't take it as far as they could. They didn't do everything they could. If I were to quit right now, it would be too soon. You know what I mean? Even 25 years later, a quarter century later. And when you get management, I mean, we've had management for 15 years, you know, like different managers, but you don't give up. You don't like just let go of the reins, you know, like completely just out of your hands. It's like, this is your thing. This is your baby. So you should absolutely be involved as much as possible. And ultimately it is your, you know, I let management advise us. And when I have questions, I'll go to them. But ultimately it's my decision. Like, this is going to be, you know, we're going to do what the band wants to do, not what everybody else wants to do. And we will take all the information that we're given and we'll make a decision on that. So we try to make informed decisions. I've been shut down by my own management in the past. You know, I've been shut down by my own band in the past for whatever, you know, like, oh, those lyrics are fucking terrible, or like, you need to rewrite that, or we're definitely not doing this, or whatever. But then oftentimes I'm the big dreamer in the band. I'm the guy that's like, guys, check this out. Like imagine this. Like, I gotta like really frame it up and just really like try to paint this picture, you know? And I'll say my success rate is probably like 80 or 90%, bro. Like, there's, come on, you know, like, there's, we do some cool shit, and not to say the band guys don't have cool ideas too, but like whenever I have an idea, not, you know, it might get a little bit of a, I don't know. That's kind of tough. I don't know, but we'll do it. And it turns out fine. You know, it's, so I'm like, look, we just got to try things, man. Like, you got to be willing to sacrifice and try things because you just never know. And we've tried many things that failed miserably, man. We've had so many pitfalls. We learned everything that we know the hard way. Like, no shit. Even to this day, like, I am learning things that, like, if I had known 15 years ago, 10 years ago, different decisions would have been made, you know? We would have went the other way, but you just have to, you have to do things, man, and take chances and try to make informed decisions, you know, like be risky, be dangerous, but get the information. You know, sometimes it's not a good idea to go in completely blind, you know, but Facebook ads, YouTube ads, you got to spend a little bit of money, a couple $100, you know, try different ads and, you know, so you're going to spend money. You have to grow a business. Essentially, you're a business. It sucks to say that, but it's what it is. You know, when there's money involved, it's a business. And then we've got team members and, you know, so everybody's got to get paid and it's a business. So you just make the best decisions possible. If it's your art, if you're the person, you know, behind all of it, you need to stay involved. You can't just let the management you know, so I stay involved and sometimes it's to my own detriment. Like I speak up when I don't need to, you know, oh, well, wait a second. What about this? What about this? And it's like, dude, we got it. You know, shut up. We got it. Go play with your kids. You know?
Well, I think you brought up a really important point at the end there. You know, on the podcast, we always talk about how your band is a business, but there's this idea around business that business is evil and greedy and all that. And that's why so many artists don't want to look at their career as a business. But I want to also go back and touch on what you're talking about, how you're always communicating with the fans, you're giving them what they want. So I think that's a great example of a business that is serving the needs of your fans. It's not a self-serving business where you're just like, oh, how can I make money today?
Yeah.
You're figuring out how you can make the lives of your fans better. And I think that's one thing that stands out for artists like Ballyhoo who have a massive fan base that's really dedicated. They're there for you because you're there for them.
Yeah, I don't want to get it twisted. Like, look, what you're saying is correct, but ultimately it starts with me. It starts with the band. Like, we're doing this for ourselves. You know, like, I need this. This is like therapy for me to just live life, to get through life, you know, to cope with all the crazy things that's happened to me, right? I need this. I need to perform. I need to play. I need to make things. I love creating, not just music. I like, you know, making videos and podcasts and writing and things. I need to create. This is what I do. And so it starts with me. And ultimately, look, I want the fans to be happy. I want them to love what we're doing. But if they don't, whatever. You know, maybe it wasn't for you then, but it was definitely for me. So whatever. We put out Girls in 2017 and it was like our greatest rollout ever. Greatest rollout ever. And it received a bunch of great reviews and the sales were great the first week when there used to be sales. And like that was 3 years ago. It's so weird. But, you know, there were a few fans who were kind of like, it was a little too poppy, a little too, you know, because I had a lot of like pop elements in there, a lot of production. I did a lot of production on this one. But then after my dad had passed and everything, like those songs were already written and done before my dad passed away. And then we released the record about 3 months after he died. And then, you know, just that entire year, 2017, 2018 even, was just a blur. And like, I was not in the mood to write songs like that. Like these poppy love songs, whatever, reggae, whatever. So I started writing, it was just natural. Like I come from I listened to punk rock and ska and shit when I was a kid. That just came out, man. Like I just wanted to beat the shit out of my guitar and sing my ass off and write about these things that were bothering me, these dark situations, and get it out, man. It was like my therapy. I call it my therapy album. So we put out Detonate and it was like fanfare, I guess. Like we had fans who were like, holy shit, this is amazing. Like this, I love this, you know, but like it didn't hit like the previous one did. If you look at like our top 10 on Spotify, it's all like the poppy, like soft stuff. You know, it's not, none of the punk rock shit's really in there. So it made sense, right? But I didn't care. I didn't care what anyone thought of it. I just had to get it out. I thought the songs are fucking great. I was like, these are some of the best shit I've ever written. You know, it's definitely the deepest I've ever gone in some of these. But arrangement wise, structure, the way it sounds, like the way everything's just put together, like all the songs are like quick. Like it just reminded me of like a Green Day album, you know? And it was just from the 90s. And like, I just loved it, man. And the artwork, and just, it expressed everything that I was feeling. Like the dude even looks like me on the front. I didn't ask for that, but he just did that. But it's a guy on the front. He's just, he's laying, there's a ship that exploded, like a boat that exploded. And he's laying on a life raft. And he's like, it looks exhausted. You know, he's just floating there in the ocean. And there's like debris and things on fire and stuff in the sunset. In the background, there's an island. And to me, it signified, it was like a symbol for like, you know, we do this like beach rock reggae thing, like good vibes, whatever. But it's not always good vibes. Sometimes the fucking boat explodes and shit goes crazy and you're just exhausted. I was tired of being on tour. I was tired of missing my parents. I was tired of, you know, having to, I Don't Want to Go is about having to do like the meet and greet thing every night. Like, I love it. Like, I think the record shows that I love talking to fans and being involved. But there's a point where it's just, you get so exhausted from that. And you have that one drunk guy that fucking shakes your hand like and high fives you like 20 times in 3 minutes. And he's like, bro, and he asks the same question. And they're breathing their hot, sticky, spitty breath on you. And it's just like, smells like a brewery. And just like, ugh. Like, I got tired of that, man. It was just, I was just exhausted. And that record is like everything that I was feeling. So the point of this was that it's not always going to please everybody, you know? But if you try to please everybody, you're going to end up pleasing nobody, right? So just do it for yourself. You are the reason why you have these people listening to you. Like, don't change anything. Like, change it because you want to change it. Change it because you want to try things. Don't change it because you think this is how it's supposed to go. Right? Stay true. Be, you know, it's all about having patience. You have to, like, we're this like instant gratification culture, and you have to break from that. Like, you know, we sounded very 90s up until Girls, like, you know, and that was like, we would get that all the time. You guys sound like the 90s. That was the shit that I love. It wasn't very popular anymore, but I loved it, you know? But I also loved, you know, I like making beats and shit. So we did it and it went well. But change it because you want to change it, not because somebody's telling you, you need to change this. You need to adapt with the, you know, I say adapt is great, but you need to, like, don't change your sound just because this is what, I know bands that started working in the dubstep sound into their stuff in like 2012, 2013. And that was a fucking fad. And now it just sounds ridiculous when you listen to it in their song. You're like, really? Wow. That's, you know, it needs to be a natural thing. Don't be so quick to change direction because you think this is how it's supposed to go and you think it's going to be accepted because you want to get there. Take the long road, dude. It's going to be way better for you in the end. Have patience.
I think that all really ties together too, like the general vibe of what I see from Ballyhoo, because a lot of bands would do what you did with just changing the sound from one album to the next and they wouldn't come back from that. But for you, because you have that dedicated following, your community, even if, you know, some fans might not like Detonate as much as Girls or the other albums you've put out, which I would say, I mean, Detonate is just more of a throwback to your original sound from the early years. But because they have that dedication to you, they're not going to stop listening. They're still going to listen. And then when you put out another album, you know, I know Message to the World is kind of a surprise album.
Yeah, it was.
I heard you talk about that on one of your episodes. But that's going back again towards the direction that you were headed with Girls. I don't think it's quite as poppy, but the fans, if they stick around 2-3 years, hey, look, there's more music like what they were used to. So I think it's a combination, like you're saying, of doing what is best for you, but that's also best for the fans, at least in my opinion, because it means you're putting out genuine music. And I think that's what you're getting at too.
I agree with that. I love that. You know, it's like, I do, you know, I want them to be happy. I want them to enjoy the sounds. We try to go for quality as much as possible. Quality and quantity when it's possible. But I don't like to put anything out. If I feel like this isn't like, you know, it just isn't up to the standard, then we're not going to release it just because we recorded it. I mean, we've recorded, you know, dozens of songs that may never see the light of day just because they're not, they didn't turn out, you know? I just think that if you're, whatever it is you're doing, especially if it's not, you know, if you're not trying to work at Best Buy or, you know, I'm not saying those jobs are bad or anything, but if that's not your, your vision, that's not your life, then, you know, whatever is your vision, whatever it is that you're working on, you need to be 200% involved and present and, you know, willing to make the sacrifices and working on the craft. You know, people get upset because it doesn't happen for them. It doesn't, it hasn't happened yet. I haven't made any money yet. You can't be worried about that. If it's something that you truly enjoy, you truly love, it's not work and you're not worried about making the money. You look, we're adults. We need to work. We need to make money. That we have bills, you know, we have to pay for, we have families, you know, yes, you're going to have to work, but you know, if you love that thing, man, you're going to get off of work and then you're going to go home and spend the rest of the night doing that thing. And that includes family time and whatever. Like, you can do all that. You just have to make the time for it. And when you do something on the creative, it's, yeah, it's going to take a long time to make money from it. You know, some people hit earlier, but you can't be concerned with it. You know, and if it's something that, I had a guy tell me one time, he's like, hey man, tell me like what you did to get where you are. I'm like, all right. I mean, you know, we just played a bunch of shows and just got out of town and put out records and, you know, whatever. We went on tour. We did a thing. He's like, well, I want to go on tour, but like, I don't want to play for like 10 people. I'm like, get out of my face. Just go. And I mean, come on, man. Don't come to me about that. It's like insulting to every artist that's ever put themselves out there, you know, truly put themselves out there and starved. I was broke for a very long time, you know, up until 6 or 7 years ago. Like, I'm 25 years in. You see what I'm saying? Like, do the math. It took like 20 years to really make anything, like make any real money. I'm not rich, you know, but the music and my art, I'll say my art, it's not just the music, it's everything else, but all together, it's a combination of things. But my art, my creativity, like pays my bills now and supports my family. But it took decades, you know? It's just, if you love it, it's, you know, it doesn't matter.
Well, Howie, I think that's a really great place to end this. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. Before we close things out, I want to give you some time, if you have last thoughts to share with the listeners, if there's anything you want to mention, please feel free. Obviously, the live stream is 2 days from the date this episode comes out. That's Halloween. I believe it's shop.ballyhoorocks.com to get tickets. Is that right?
Yeah. So Halloween 2020, it's the Ballyhoo Halloween special. It's October 29th. It's 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Western. So this time we're doing a ticket pricing model. So basically, like, it's tickets are $6.66, because why not? Or you can get a ticket for free if you just buy some at the store, and it can be a $5 koozie. It can, you know, it can be whatever, buy a sticker pack, whatever. But anyway, do that. Just make sure you add the ticket at checkout. Make sure you add the ticket in there with your merch purchase, and it'll, you'll get it for free. And we're looking forward to it, man. We're looking forward to playing a show and dressing up and, you know, doing this cool thing. So, and definitely like look around for me. I'm all over the web, you know, it's YouTube. Search Howie Spangler. I have the song of the day on there. I do the podcast, Tales from the Green Room podcast. Please subscribe to that. On Instagram, Howie Spangler. So all the places, you know, I got my own solo shit on Spotify. Check it out.
We'll put links to everything Howie's mentioned in our show notes at thebetterbandbureau.com/48. That's the number 48. So you can find all the links, subscribe, follow, buy the tickets to the show, all of that. And then one last question, Howie, for you.
Sure.
With the live streams, what do you think is the most important piece of advice you could pass on to any artist who's trying to do their own live stream?
I would say don't get wrapped up in the details or the production value so much. Definitely try to make it look as good as you can and make it sound as good as you can, but just do it. Just do something. Like, you know, even if you go on Amazon and spend $15 and get some tiki lights to put behind you, you know, and, you know, make it vibey, do something, put some cool tapestries up. I don't know, anything. don't try to make it look like ours. You know, if you can, great, but just do something and be there for your fans, because look, man, we all need music more than ever right now. It's a crazy time. Get on there, connect. You won't believe how much you'll grow by just getting on and talking to your fans, you know, on a half hour live stream, play some songs, chat back and forth with them, ask them questions. What do you want to hear? You know, hey, what do you guys want to hear next week? Tune in next week, 8 p.m. Like, create something, create a show. I was doing a show for a while called Let's Hang Out, and I got burnt out, actually. I don't like doing it at night, I think is the thing. I like, because by the time like 9 p.m. rolls around, I'm like, I'm ready to just like chill, you know? But I was doing a thing every Wednesday night, and it was everybody'd show up, and I'd have like a couple hundred people in there watching me and throwing super chats and donating Venmo. And it's just, I'm taking requests. Like, you need to do that. This is how we interact, you know? Imagine how stoked you'd be if your favorite artist noticed you and said something to you. You know, you were able to ask them a question. If I could talk to the guys in Green Day, just pick their brain about nerdy shit from the albums and things, and I would love that, you know? So do that.
All right, awesome. Howie, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. It's been a pleasure to hear your knowledge, experience, your stories. All of that, I think, is going to be so helpful to artists, just like your podcast. So Tales from the Green Room, you know, you're on Spotify, Apple, any of the major players. And again, if somebody for some reason can't find that, it'll be in the show notes at thebetterbandbureau.com/48, as well as the links to Ballyhoo's music, your shop where people can get the tickets for Halloween, or merch. If you're listening after Halloween has passed, I'm sure there will be other events coming up soon.
We got plans.
It's been an absolute blast to have you here, Howie. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me, man. Appreciate it. Hashtag BBB podcast. Appreciate it, guys.
That does it for another episode of the Better Band Bureau podcast. Thanks so much for listening. And of course, big thank you to Howie from Ballyhoo for joining us on the show and sharing his knowledge from his 25 years in a band. I've been a fan of Ballyhoo for, I think I want to say 9 years now. And it's really amazed me to see not only how far they've come, but also how they are an amazing example of a DIY. And keep in mind, we say decide it yourself band, who really is invested in their career as well as their relationship with their fans. So go check out shop.ballyhoorocks.com to get your Halloween 13 tickets. As Howie said, they're $6.66 each, or if you buy any single piece of merch at the same time, the ticket will become free in your cart. Just make sure to have it in the cart when you buy your merch. It's always a pleasure to have guests like Howie on the show who just have such a passion and knowledge for their music. So again, thank you to Howie. Thank you to everyone listening. We will be back with another new episode next Tuesday at 6 a.m. Until then, have an awesome week, stay healthy, and of course, as always, keep rocking.